Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life. Hello, Thriving Birth Worker. I am Erin, your host today, and I am thrilled to be able to share today's conversation with you. I get the awesome opportunity to chat with Jane Clapp, who is a mindful strength and movement coach, a trauma-informed body resilience expert from Toronto, Canada. As a birth worker, we encounter trauma. We see it in our clients, we encounter it in ourselves, and through secondary trauma in interactions with our clients. Our bodies and nervous system can store these things, and there can be times where we feel stuck and unsure of how to process it all. In today's conversation, we discuss all of this and more, and we hear Jane's empowering perspective and unique toolset that she uses. Jane believes our past struggles, trauma, or health issues don't have to be a life sentence. She believes that we have the power, with enough support and resourcing, to free ourselves from the shackles that limit our recovery process and our potential for more happiness and joy. While it is widely accepted that mindfulness is necessary to shape the body, Jane asserts that the body and movement is one of the most powerful tools for shaping the mind. And this is where she and I just are so in line, and I loved this conversation. So without further ado, here it is. So hello, Jane. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today.
Thank you so much for having me, Erin. I'm so interested in your work as well.
That's awesome. Totally, the feeling is mutual. And I was just telling Jane a second ago that I am a Facebook fan who just simply stalks her. I don't usually interact a whole lot, but I really love her work. So
that's amazing.
Not a creepy way to start the conversation, but that's where we're at.
It's been said before, so you're not alone.
So for those of my listeners who don't know who you are, if you could just share a little bit about who you are, what you do, how you got there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm Canadian. I live in Toronto. I've been here for about 20 years. I'm a mom. I had a baby at home 16 years ago. And I've worked with a lot of moms over the years, pre and post. And I'm really interested in how the body kind of tries to communicate really vital information to us to help us stay on course with our deeper self, and ultimately how important that journey is as parents, as moms, to habitually be re-engaging with ourselves. So that's a huge passion in terms of working with people who've given birth, of all genders, obviously. And I really try my very best to help people rediscover their own resilience coming in through the body, through embodied mindfulness, not just through a nervous system lens, because that's just a part of the puzzle. And I'm currently studying Jungian analysis, so that's probably a minimum of a 5-year journey for me. So I'm very interested in depth psychology and how the body, beyond its physiology, neurobiology, is also trying to help us come into a more awakeness, individuation, finding out who we are, and coming into wholeness. So that's what I do. I've trained in lots of different movement disciplines over the years. I taught aerobics in my teens, came back to movement coaching as a personal trainer in my mid-20s. I've studied yoga, tensegrity therapy, fascial stretch therapy, scientific strength and conditioning, Aldoa, and different body-based work with folks. So I don't have a modality, and I have a very client-centered approach, but I also do a lot of psychoeducation and work with folks online. So I have a lot of clients. At least half my clients are now online, even though I have a studio, and I offer webinars, and I'm the founder of a training program called Movement for Trauma. And so that's kind of what I do. And apart from that, I really, oh, and I ride horses. So I have a really full, really wonderful life that I've had to really work hard at intentionally creating.
That's awesome. So I love how you explained it, because I feel similar sometimes in my work is I've got this big tool bag and I'm like, well, it all depends on the client of what I'm going to use and what we're going to explore. And sometimes people give you a funny look when you can't just define it in two words, but it's also really powerful and fun when you get to explore that.
Oh, and it's so much about just find the right people walking through the door or are meeting us, and it just fits. I know.
Awesome. So when you're talking about your journey, was there any specific turning point for you that drew you to this work? Or do you feel like it was just you were drawn to it more, you know, on a level where you didn't make a conscious decision? Like, how did you transition from aerobics to what you're doing now?
I know, right? Well, when I think back to how incredibly instinctual doing aerobics was as a teenager, living in a pretty toxic environment, it was brilliant because there's rhythm and there's music and there's moving in community with people. So I'm like, wow, that was really brilliant. And somehow I got drawn to that. But with that being said, I think part of it was just sheer survival. I was an actor for a while after leaving the corporate world, you know, full on pumps and pearls and suits and all of that. And then I moved to Toronto and I left that behind and I'm like, what am I going to do? So I just sort of like, oh, well, I've always liked fitness. So I started taking a course, a college program, it was part survival. And then at a certain point, I found this really incredible studio in Toronto. And anybody on the west side of Toronto who lives here would remember this studio. It was called Level 5. And it was a community. It was super innovative. There were tons of creatives and cool people there. And it felt like home. And so I just started hanging around there a bunch. I bartered a painting for a membership. So I was painting a lot at the time. And I just wanted to keep going. There was something that drew me and I just wanted to be there more. I wanted to teach more. I wanted to interact with the clients there more. So I got back into training then. And then when that studio sold about 5 years after I'd started there, it was a point of me needing to decide to open up my own studio, which I did about a block away from there. And that's when things really started to shift. I had a private space in the back of a brick and beam building, and it was beautiful. And people started to come in, and it was quiet and it was private in a way that studios hadn't been yet. That was 2006. And stuff started coming to the surface when people were with me. And I think part of it is that I'm not afraid of people's pain and suffering. So things started coming out when I was with people. And I started doing more touch work with fascial stretch therapy. And then one day a woman found me in the neighborhood. She's a beloved Canadian artist. She was recovering from cancer, breast cancer, and she came to work with me. And there were no instructions really on how to work with someone at the time after cancer treatment and lumpectomies and all the fascial adhesions that go along with that. And then more women living with breast cancer post-treatment started coming in. And then it just really sparked something in me. And I started really liking working with people who were suffering and helping them find vitality in the middle of that. And that's really how it started evolving. And I realized I wasn't afraid to work with people that lots of people were afraid to work with. And so my mission was, how can we help you find your vitality again, even in little tiny tastes during treatment, for example, or with degenerative conditions. And I did a ton of empirical research in all those hours I spent with folks, having to learn things myself and supplement my education and And that's how it really started to shift. And then the trauma work, obviously, I have a history of trauma. Who doesn't? Wants to work with people who have a history of trauma? There was a pivotal relationship where I could see that there were multiple physical, emotional, psychological impacts of that trauma in that person I was with. And so that was like, oh, okay. So then I started studying it and I really started to dig into it. And I needed something more stimulating intellectually than just movement coaching. And that's when I really started to devour any research I can. And I would say that's partly what led me to here, but it's a constant evolution. No, now what I'm doing is weird. Like I have a workshop in January where I'm papering my entire studio, walls and floors, and we're going to do some movement and embodied drawing. So ask me where I'm going to be in a year.
That's the best, though. It's always being on that evolution and just growing and never knowing like where it's going to take you, but trusting the process. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I loved what you shared about how you have settled into this place of not being afraid of other people's pain, of being able to be comfortable sitting with them in that space and holding space for them there. If, like you're saying, all of us have worked with, all of us experience trauma. So anyone we work with, any of our clients are going to have some level of pain and trauma that they're carrying. How did you come to this place of feeling comfortable going there, not feeling overwhelmed or disqualified, but being okay with sitting there in that pain? Do you feel like it was more intuitive, more connected to your personality, or do you feel like you were able to work through some things to be able to offer that part of yourself?
Probably all of what you said. I do a lot of personal work. So I'm a firm believer that if you were going to be interfacing directly with people with trauma histories, that you really need to do a lot of your own personal work beyond mindfulness. I'm a big believer in really good psychotherapy that has a firm understanding of the far-reaching impacts of trauma, from attachment to physiological to spiritual impacts of trauma. So what allows me to continue holding space for folks is that I'm habitually in my own work. So beyond moving, beyond somatic emotional awareness. So that's a big part of what I do. And also I did some, I don't talk about it a lot, but I did some really good Reiki training, learning how to notice when I lose my root and when I feel that urge to jump in. And I think where people get really burned out, boundaries get really fuzzy and unhealthy, is when we're with people who are suffering and we feel the urge to fix it. And it seems really common sense, but it's hard to stop ourselves from doing that because it can be very personally uncomfortable being around someone who is suffering and you can't fix it, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is good. I was going to, it's on my list of questions and you're jumping ahead and it's fabulous. So this idea of, holding that space and allowing yourself, not letting yourself off the hook, but just being really aware of that we're not responsible to fix it, that we're not responsible to, I always reference to a lot of Brené Brown's work because I feel like she does a really good job of kind of laying out what is compassion and what is empathy, and then also having those internal boundaries of being okay with having your own space internally and not feeling responsible for other people. So when you're working with a client and you feel that initial, that push to maybe you notice it like, oh, I have this push to fix, or I have this push to jump in and try and rescue. What is the thought process or what are the tools that you use to coach yourself through that moment?
It's all very body based, because I mean, I talk a lot about empathy can actually be the tend and befriend response, or the fawn response. So it can be a really old survival response that is just in us as human beings. So my body will tell me through this feeling in my gut, through the enteric nervous system, it's like an urgent pull. It's like an urge to act before thinking about it. And it feels like, I don't know, it's like a zap in my belly and this forward energy that is that pulls me forward. And I have to notice that and realize, oh, that's my sympathetic nervous system saying go, right? And then I'm like, okay, so that could actually be a boundary violation in that moment, because I'm jumping forward into someone else's emotional space and experience and actually taking away agency from them, which is ultimately very disempowering. It doesn't help anybody.
Yes, that's so good. And yeah, noticing our feelings and how our body is responding is, it's a practice. It doesn't happen overnight. And I think it's differentiating this idea of being in your head and being in your body and like collaborating, you know, like being embodied fully with your body and your head, not just like rationally reasoning things out. And if someone's starting place is like, I see that I do this. I come home and I feel really drained from my clients. I come home and I feel really heavy. I feel I've overextended myself. And they might feel this, that they are in their head a lot. What are, if you're not like super in tune and like, oh, I feel really sensitive to what's going on inside of me, what are your first starting points with the clients you're working with, just helping them? Because it's a journey. Like, I feel like sometimes we can talk about this and almost not have compassion for ourselves and like, oh, you know, I have to do it right. And like, I want to respond right every time. And I never want to violate my own boundaries. And like, you know, when I look back at my journey and learning to, just slow down enough to listen to my body, not my head. It was definitely a, you know, one step forward, five step back process of feeling like that was it's learning to communicate with our body, because our body does have such a unique language. So what are, as I'm like processing my question, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase it, but I guess I would say, because when we talk about the language of the body, I just threw that out there. What are some big just cues that you ask your clients to just start noticing to transition from this being in this headspace to connecting to your body? So you talked about the zap in the gut, this in like just instinctual response without slowing down and processing it. Are there any other things that you ask your clients to just start cueing into?
Well, I would say that, first of all, I don't go right there. Because interoception or inner body awareness isn't a resource for everybody. In fact, sometimes there has to be more work to stabilize people in the present that doesn't involve going to body awareness. So that's not often where I start. It depends on the person. It's so contextual. We're all so different, but one of the things that I do with folks is I teach them to practice dual awareness. I believe Babette Rothschild, a renowned trauma therapist, coined the term dual awareness. It could be a very old mindfulness term as well, but I teach people to anchor in some type of extraoceptive sense, right? And then potentially check in with what's going on inside of them, because the body isn't this like truth telling device. It's not something where you just feel your body and then you miraculously get an answer. It's far more complex than that. So I don't have instructions for that, but I would say that if someone is coming home at the end of the day, completely exhausted and wiped out after being with folks, there's some really basic things I would ask them. Are you drinking enough water? Are you eating at regular intervals? What are your sleep habits like? Are you breathing through your nose during the day, or do you find yourself with your mouth popping open and overbreathing? What is your posture telling you about how you're feeling in any given moment? And how present are you with little signals that you can tune into that tell you that you're moving into a more activated or a collapsed low energy state? And so I would kind of help them determine with the things that are most accessible for them in whatever environment they're in to start being like, oh, in very clear ways, my body is telling me this or this. So that's one of the ways in. I talk about a visualization. It sounds funny, but like a snow globe. So when people are in a less than grounded state, and their breathing biomechanics are going to suck, and they're using all their accessory breathing muscles, which leads to neck tension and pain, as I'm sure you know very well, and pelvic floor hypertonicity and all that stuff that goes along with the activated nervous system, I try to teach them through balance activities what it feels like to be speedy and what it feels like to be slow. Sort of like if you shake a snow globe, all the flakes are going to be floating around. That would be kind of activated sympathetic nervous system. We can't live in that state all day, but a lot of us do. Versus how can you do something really challenging, even have to do something really fast, but still feel like those snowflakes are settled in the bottom of your snow globe?
I love that example. That's awesome. And just as a side note, I love what you teach on, you do little snippets on Instagram connected to balance every now and then, and they're really fun to play with. So if you're wanting just some fun practices to just try, go follow Jane on Instagram, because she will post these little just practices of try this and try that and notice what you're feeling in your body. And I love the balance ones because it does bring you into such a moment of being present and just all these little tweaks that you have to make to focus and just be in that moment and to be really present and to really tune into your body just with this. It's seemingly simple, but there's so many things that are going on in your nervous system and your body to keep you upright that it's just fun and accessible.
Yeah, I find balance work does the snow globe thing. It actually forces people out of like sheer survival, activating the writing reflex, right? Writing your body in space. It forces people to settle the snow globe, the snowflakes down, you know?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's move into a little bit of when you're working with new moms, because you're saying you work a lot with, you know, pregnant or, you know, parents, new parents. I mean,
I used to see new moms more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have any new mom clients now, but I've worked with a ton over the years. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So new parents, you know, no matter what the gender, like whoever you are, if you have a new tiny person in your life, it can be a lot for them. Mm-hmm. So how do you coach them, or like, what do they, there's that balance of feeling overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And so when you're wanting to coach them, it needs to be from such a gentle place. And I know birth workers are wanting to support their clients because it's such a vulnerable, huge space of transition.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also sometimes needing that little gentle nudge to support themselves, because it's so easy to come wrapped up in this tiny person, mm-hmm. and to just be so focused on them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you just even start that conversation with them to encourage them to support themselves? Obviously, how they support themselves is going to be very individual, and it will be simple things like you said, like the drinking of the water, mm-hmm. and the eating of the food and trying to get as much sleep as possible, like things that obviously even in those types of things can seem really inaccessible. And even talking about that, I can see a really strong reaction sometimes because they're I mean, and I remember being in that space of being like, please don't tell me to do one more thing because I'm barely holding on. And so if you're going to start coaching me on how much water to drink, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like, no, not really. Yeah. But like, there's such a raw emotion in that space. And so how do you approach even like encouraging, but not doing it in a way where it feels like one more thing?
Well, it depends what people are asking. So I don't give unsolicited advice.
Can you say that one more time?
I don't give unsolicited advice.
That's so good.
Right? So first of all, people are less likely to punch you and want to like get pissed at you if you're not being like, la 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 la, you know, like, I would say that there is a heavy, heavy focus on helping people, women, recover their bodies after birth, and not as much focus on helping, making sure that women have the psychological and community support in place to help them navigate that major existential shift in their life and the impact it has on relationship. And you better believe it, if you've had a history of trauma, at every stage that your child hits, that was the age you might have experienced childhood trauma, your stuff's going to come up. So if I were to give any unsolicited advice, if a parent is looking really overwhelmed, there would definitely be a conversation of wanting to proactively deal with any potential mental health stuff. And so I would be kind of scanning for what support there is in place, because it's very unnatural the way that we raise kids alone in a home. A potential parent takes time off work, isolates themselves if they are a working parent from a community, and then is at home alone with a baby. And it's a recipe for mental health struggles for folks. And so I'm a huge believer, if people have the means to get to be proactive in times of overwhelm and bringing resources in, because it's so much more than dealing with like pelvic health issues and other issues, you know, with the body. It goes right to the core of who we are when we have children.
Yes, that's awesome. So as we're wrapping up this conversation, is there anything you would want to share? Like if you, I mean, you have this platform for just a moment for two birth workers. So we're talking to practitioners who work with prenatal, postnatal women. Is there anything you'd want to add as far as just an encouragement or a reminder?
Yeah, I would say that I'm extremely, first of all, grateful that people giving birth have access to birth workers, because it's not all that common that we do in our society. And I had an incredible and healthy pregnancy and birth and felt so incredibly supported that that I'm so, like, the work that you do is profound, because what happens, how supported people feel during a birth, even if it's a traumatic birth, during the birth and after the experience, has such a lasting impact on what type of long-term impact that's going to have on people. So yes, the other thing, it's a bit of a non sequitur, but a lot of birth workers make terrible money. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to deal with burnout, if we live in constant fear of not being able to pay our bills, that's going to leave you exhausted at the end of the day. So if there's any way to really see the value in what you do and potentially find ways to make sure you earn a decent living so that you can pay your bills and not live in fear, find a way to do that, because that's one of the best protections against burnout and potentially having to leave something that you love. So I'm a big believer in putting value on what you do and really living with a sense of deep worth for really valuable and impactful work in the world.
So important. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So for my listeners, how can they find you? How can they get a hold of you or work with you or just, you know, follow you on Instagram? Where are you at?
I'm at, it's hilarious, at Jane Clapp, J-A-N-E-T-H-E, Clapp, C-L-A-P-P, as in clap your hands. And on Facebook, Jane Clapp Embodied Resilience. And my website is janeclapp.com. And yeah, I have webinars I'm offering every month in January. I'm offering a traumatic stress and breath webinar with a Buteyko teacher and yoga teacher, Jennifer Snowden. So I'm always innovating and finding interesting things to share with people. So I hope to see some of you there.
Yes, if you guys even just pop over on Instagram right now and just follow her, and you will have some fun ideas pop up in your feed that are really accessible, really quick, but also very centering. So Jane, thank you so much for your time and just for having this conversation with us today.
Thank you so much, Erin. It was so nice to meet you.
This was a fun and fluid conversation with Jane, who is an expert in her field. Jane has a deep knowledge that is confident enough not to have a simple formulaic approach to movement, healing, and embodiment, but explores the nuances that make us complex humans. So if you're interested in learning more from her, you can find all her information at janeclapp.com. Clapp is spelled with two P's. If you're enjoying these podcasts, if you could take 10 seconds out of your day to subscribe, rate, and review the show, that is a powerful way that you can support this work. I hope this conversation encouraged you to include your body when you're thinking about living your best and most thriving life. You matter. Your body matters and your work matters. Have a wonderful week and we'll talk soon. The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.